You said your top 11?
12 movies. If you haven't seen the following,
he's already past, you know, Quentin Tarantino's
10.
Stop calling it the following. It's just following. It's the Prestige.
It's a lot of the, by the way.
The Dark Knight.
3.
The Dark Knight Rises.
4.
The Prestige.
That's it.
The Dunkirk.
Welcome to our Film Fathers Podcast, the definitive podcast about fatherhood, film, and fatherhood in film. This is Jelani, and with me as always are two guys who are not just self-important, they're actually important, Martin and Brady.
Are you saying that there's a chance that when we push that button, we destroy the world?
The chances are near zero.
Near zero.
What do you want from theory alone?
Zero would be nice.
This week, we explore fission and fusion in the only way we know how, through film. With one of the biggest movies of last year that is currently a heavy favorite to take home Best Picture at the Oscars this year, Oppenheimer delivers the Christopher Nolan vision like no one else could. I suppose it's the easiest question to ask, is this the best movie you saw in the last year?
Is this going to win Best Picture?
I think it's going to win Best Picture.
No.
Is it my favorite movie or the best movie? Maybe. I haven't really thought about it.
We come prepared. I think one.
I love it. Let's put it that way.
Guys, I loved it.
Yeah.
And had we not had a tornado touchdown in my town the following night, I was planning on watching it for this back-to-back nights.
Yeah, okay. I would have recommended that, yeah.
Well, I went in Monday. I was like, all right, I'm going to watch around half tonight, half tomorrow, and then I'll be good to go. It obviously knew it was a 3-hour movie, and I was up till midnight. I could not stop watching it. There were opportunities, and I had no interest in stopping. I was enamored with it, and I loved it. And the whole next morning, I thought about it on the train. I'm like texting people. Obviously, we try not to talk to each other about it. So I'm like, I can't text you guys about it. So I'm texting others, and I'm just like, I really kind of took over my brain, and I was like, I think I'm watching this again tonight. And then it took a tornado and a lack of power for me to not watch
it. But was it as good as Saltburn?
Well, I'll say I liked Saltburn more in hindsight than I did in the watching. And,
but yes, I know.
There were no bat scenes in Oppenheimer.
Weren't there? I would argue there may have been. But
It's so good.
I really liked it. Jelani, sorry, I have not given you a second.
No, it's all right, because it's just funny, the differences between our... I have not gone to bed before midnight this entire year.
That's what you got hung up on.
So I watched it up until the...
What time do you get up in the morning?
7.
Oh, that's not so bad.
Therein lies the rub. Yeah, I'm 5:50.
Man, that is early.
My alarm goes off at 6:30, but I don't...
It does explain.
You take that half hour.
I got to herkle-dirkle a little bit.
But there, it's right. Like, you're not, you know, you shave off all that time and push it the other way. And
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
So I watched up until like 2 hours into the movie.
He hated it.
And then and then I paused and I was like, all right, this is where we need to stop. Because that was taking the sheets. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I can break there.
Kind of act two.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I figured there would be like a point where it was like, good break.
Yeah.
Kind of maybe less time on the second part, but I was like, I was
all the way through. So I enjoyed it. I don't think I loved it, and I probably would watch it again to get to that point.
Probably would or wouldn't?
I would.
Do it.
But I did enjoy it. And then I also enjoyed like act two, which kind of got into a little heisty, like a little the long con for me. Which I kind of put it in a note there, like, did he play Robert Downey Jr. the whole time? Like, it was that his con game? Like, I know I'm going to go to this trial. I know they're going to railroad me. I know all this stuff. And I know it's going to come out in the end, and I'm going to screw him over at the end.
No.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, this is real life, so it's really documented. But I to your point, I love the way that they played that out, right? Like,
yeah.
That they said a couple times, like, hey, this is not a...
It's not a trial.
It's not a trial. And then they say the same thing to him. It's like, hey, this is not a trial.
Very much.
They treated it very much like a trial. And then they did the same thing.
We're not convicting. We're just denying.
Exactly. We're not convicting. We're denying. All those great lines that are, you know, the show, the dichotomy of both those hearings or those situations, that it's what Robert, is Robert Strauss? Strauss did to Oppenheimer and what ended up happening to him then at the end. Lewis. I thought Robert
said,
Downey Jr.
I almost said Levi, I swear to God.
Levi Strauss?
In my brain, I almost said it. I was like, that's definitely not the answer.
Levi Strauss. But I thought he did great, especially RDJ? By the end, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I get why he... So I think it was interesting. There was a point, and I want to say even like, I don't know, over half of the way through, the whole time I'm just like, it's so refreshing to see him just be different, to not be Tony Stark. Yeah, you know, it's like, it's all we've been submerged with for so long
to not
with
be
him.
Almost to be almost unlikable, or actually very unlikable by the end.
Well, but yeah, by the end, yeah, right. Yeah. But he was obviously likable in his own way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it was just, it's so long that was all he was. And mm-hmm. I know he's done some other things here and there, but yeah. I think it was just, that was him. Robert Downey Jr.
Do the shtick.
Was Tony Stark. And so to watch this movie and see him so out of that was really refreshing.
And
so good. And, mm-hmm. And I know he's won a lot of awards along the way here. And yeah, it just seems like, of course, yeah, I get all that. Like, he very much deserves it, and it's kind of great to see. You know, I know we've talked about him numerous times on the pod, and he's really, really good. I mean, honestly, a lot of people in this movie are really, really good.
I don't have a weak link. Do you guys have a weak link?
Not of anyone of note. I think you'd be
Jelani does.
I wonder if I think I know his. I'm going to keep it in my brain.
And I might agree too, but I just can't. Right, as I'm talking about it, I can't.
There was.
I felt like Kenneth Branagh didn't need to be in it.
Oh.
Well, I think that about it.
It's Niels Bohr.
But you could have just. I could you could have had him like one time and then that was it.
I'm
but
over
he didn't.
Branagh.
He did not take.
I think
we
I
know.
I think I said that before. He doesn't need to be in anything.
Even in Tenet? I thought he was good in Tenet.
He could be replaced. Yeah. No, I think that started me on a spiral with him.
Oh. On the downward.
It just didn't feel like he was the right guy there.
I felt like he was the right guy
there. I think a lot of people agree with you.
And I think he's a good... I liked him as Niels Bohr.
I just felt like he didn't do... I guess I don't know. Again, I didn't read the book.
I haven't either. I kind of wanted...
Dude, so many things.
But I did read Einstein's biography by Walter Isaacson after this, because I just wanted to get more. And
after
I
this? Know,
yeah, after
oh,
I watched the movie.
I saw it
in the theater.
Yesterday and the day before?
No, but I watched it again. Colin really wanted to watch it. I watched about an hour and a half with him. Fast forward to the first little scene.
Brooklyn asked if he could watch it. Yeah. And Jen goes, no.
Yeah. As long as I can pause it on one part, you look away and I move
two parts.
You said two that parts. Scene. That's the what second, I was thinking of.
The second I let go, maybe a little longer than I should have, but there wasn't an actual act. So I'm like, that's okay.
I was thinking about learning Sanskrit.
Yeah. Yeah, the Sanskrit and then in the board meeting.
Yes.
Yeah.
The flashback or whatever.
So that's where there was a good stretch where I was like, why is Emily Blunt in this movie?
Yes. Yes.
I was like, I just don't get the point. Like, it's her. And I
felt like she was underutilized.
As an actress,
for that level of actor. Oh. And I think that's part of what he's saying with Kenneth Branagh, too. It's like you're getting a person. And I'll touch on this because I did see a note.
Disagree,
I think it's.
Keep going.
No, and in the end, I agree.
Okay.
I'm fine with it.
By the end.
But it's because of her, like, the redemption at the end is much more kind of like, okay. It's like, it kind of made it all worthwhile.
Sure. Okay.
Agree. And this goes, I think, I know I've read this, and I don't know enough of to dive too deep, but I know it's been said that, like, there's a lot of thought that Nolan doesn't always have the most fleshed out great female roles. And so for a long time I was like, what the why is it like she's doing nothing? Like, she's kind of, you're like, oh, I think you're held to an expectation when you see Emily Blunt at this point in her career. You're like, oh, Emily Blunt. I'm like, what? Why are you in this movie? Like, what are you doing? You're literally just kind of there, and then you're not there. You're just kind of like, I wonder if she was an alcoholic deadbeat mom at one point, and then she's just kind of, but really not showcasing acting about it. She's just
she was just there. And that's, I had the exact same note. I'm like, I looked over at Jen. I go, Emily Blunt hasn't done anything
for a long time, nothing.
Right. And then she gets to the scene with Jason Clark, and you're just like, ah, there you are. I go, like Mariana Rivera coming out of the ninth.
That. And then she comes on for an encore and won't shake hands.
Yeah.
Boom. Which is real.
The Safdie brother.
Which was real. That part they said was to a T. That was like a huge thing at the time, became like news that she refused to shake his hand.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because she made a point of it.
Yeah.
Like, why did you?
Why would you do it?
I really liked his character though. Teller, played by the Safdie brother. I thought he was interesting.
He did good.
How he's talking about he's talking about the hydrogen bomb like early on. It's just his whole attitude. I appreciated. I think.
Well, so I was like, I'll readily admit, like in the beginning, I'm like, they're throwing names, and I was like, who's that? But Nolan, so I put a note. I was like, the cast is impressive, but I'm having a hard time keeping up with, like, I know a couple of the names, you know, like, you're Heisenberg, and you know some things, obviously, now.
Did you guys recognize the actor that played Heisenberg?
I didn't.
No, I don't think so.
So, maybe?
Wait, hold on, let me.
I feel like I recognize a lot. I would be hard-pressed to say that I know him from anything particular.
Something old-timey.
So that's I wouldn't say old-timey, but he's been popping up lately because I guess he's signed a deal with Netflix because he's been in like 5 Netflix films that I've seen in the last like 2 years.
Matthias Schweighofer?
Yeah.
Was he in Downton Abbey or something?
No, he was in the Army of the Dead.
He's got quite a jawline.
And then Army of Thieves. He's the
safecracker.
Yeah.
He's in the one with Jennifer Garner.
Family Switch?
Yep. Where it's like
correct.
Freaky Friday. They actually call out Freaky Friday. And
Anyway, I don't think this guy's as big a deal as you think he is.
Not like Robert Desmalian. Is that how you say his name?
David.
David?
David Desmalian.
God, I'm getting first names way off. But he's been in some
he's
some
a superhero stuff. Guy.
Yeah.
He's been in Suicide Squad and the Ant-Mans.
Yeah.
He's definitely, he's got previous.
He's been in Nolan. Other Nolan movies as well.
Exactly.
But yeah, like I was saying, I don't think there's a weak link. I think Josh Hartnett did great.
Oh my God, I thought he was amazing.
Remember when we talked about him back with Slevin? Yeah, Lucky Number Slevin. And I'm like, at that point, I had seen Oppenheimer already. I'm like, yeah, and he's had a little resurgence, and he does really well.
I really, really liked him. I thought he was great. I couldn't get over feeling like he's obviously looks older and he's matured a lot.
He looked
good,
though.
He put on good weight.
Yeah.
But he reminded me of somebody, and I couldn't come up with the actor who it was. I kept seeing him like,
Brolin?
Man.
He looked kind of Brolin-ish,
too. I don't know if it's even someone as big as famous as he is, but he just seemed like somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
I was really impressed with him. I was like, God, I love the casting with that, because I didn't, wouldn't have been like, I hope Hartnett's in this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. To me, it's hard to find a flaw in this movie. I love the structure of it.
Oh, even the beginning, the way that they showed like the chaotic dreams and like the frenetic
dreaming of the quantum world,
the quantum like aspects of it, like over like pulsating I was like, God, I really love like the way this was starting out. It was one of the first notes I put. I thought it was just Nolan, he's so ridiculous.
So good.
Yeah. I don't even understand the technical aspects.
Yeah.
I know he's crushing
the thing is that he does.
Yeah. You know,
that's why no one else should have made this movie, because he's able to put in a lot of the science talk and not make it sound not confuse people with it. I don't think. I thought it was good.
Well, I know the note that I was pulling up there is Nolan deliberately cast recognizable actors to help the audience distinguish between who was you, because it was hard to keep up with how many people were involved.
So,
so it's like, you could know, there's like Hartnett, you know, David Dastalchian.
Well, I forget who was on screen at one
David
time.
David Krumholtz.
Yeah.
But Jen goes like, what, is that Matt Damon? I'm like, no, that's not Matt Damon. And then like 10 minutes later,
he was in it?
10 minutes later, Matt Damon shows up, go, that's Matt Damon.
I loved Matt Damon in this.
Damon was great.
Perfect.
You guys have probably all heard the story. I saw it on TikTok before I ever saw the movie.
He was waiting for a call.
He said he was on a break to his wife. And he's like, there's one exception.
Yeah.
If Christopher Nolan calls, that's the only thing I will not you know, take a break from. Yeah. And sure enough, it was Nolan called with this.
Yeah, Casey Affleck, I thought, did great, too, in a very small role. But just he had that stare that whole time. And he's like,
I'd put him in anything. I think he's great. Yeah. I've always liked Casey Affleck.
Yeah, both Afflecks.
I do like both Afflecks. I think I would put Casey in my movie before Ben.
All right, that's fair. That's a fair one.
Cheaper, obviously.
But yes, no flaw in the cast, no flaw in the script. I would like to read the book just to see how, because it feels, obviously it's a 3-hour movie, so you know, they didn't cut a lot, but it feels like they must have still left a lot in the cutting room floor. And I don't think you could have cut any more. There's no fat on it.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I don't think so. And I really felt like it was for a topic. I think this is what I thought when I heard it was coming out. I initially had really little interest. I was like, you know, I just don't think I'm even ready to dive into that world. I don't love some of these topics I just don't know anything about. So I'm like, it's almost intimidating. And I was like, I know I like Nolan, but I'm like, do I really want to try to dive into a science movie? I'm like, I don't know. It just doesn't necessarily appeal to me, which is probably why I never saw it in the summer last year when it was out, you know. And I'm kicking myself because I legitimately, he made a movie about science and the quantum physics. And yes, it's bigger. It's about this momentous occasion in world history, but it's done in such a great way. Like I said, I wanted to watch it again the next night.
Right away. Yeah.
You didn't have to take 6 weeks to learn Dutch.
I did not. I would take longer. I don't know. How long has it taken you to work on Spanish?
Listen,
you should feel pretty bad about yourself.
The whole house is on Duolingo. We were all doing it today. We got Russian, French, Spanish. Is everybody?
Hopefully they're all in different rooms.
Polish. Come on. Do Polish before Russian.
She has a Russian friend in her class. Oh, that's okay, why.
Nice.
But yeah, so that was one of the things that stood out to me was I didn't realize like how smart Oppenheimer was in all the different areas. Like you obviously know about him and his quantum mechanics and physics and stuff like that. But like when he starts giving the speech in Dutch and you're just like, wait, you learned Dutch? He's like, oh, I figured I might as well. Like, oh yeah. Totally. Okay, cool.
Yeah. I agree with you there because I love quantum physics. I love astrophysics. I love all the stuff. I geek out on a lot of it. I really do. I watch a lot of videos. So like,
as many do.
He's doing his research.
You hear a lot about Heisenberg. You hear a lot about Niels Bohr. Obviously, you hear a lot about Einstein. Like I said, I read his biography. But you know, Oppenheimer is always just the bomb. So you don't realize that he'd worked on. He's the bomb.com. You didn't realize that he did a lot of work on. Like he was talking about dark stars, you know, black holes before black holes. Right. So you don't realize how smart and how much the reason that they picked him was because he was, the best American for the job at the time. And then you learn from the movie that there are other reasons why maybe he didn't do anything else because it consumed everything else after that. So,
yeah. Well, definitely that. Yeah. I think you see that consume him. And also for better or worse, it's hanging on him. Obviously, at that point, I mean, it not enough that like Strauss is willing to have him come to Princeton, and you know, despite being associated with the bomb, because obviously he's one of the best minds in the world of his time, as they, I think, call out in a great way with like kind of like why didn't you include Albert Einstein?
Right.
Like,
it was 40 years ago.
He was of his time,
yeah.
But this is a new time, and the collection of people that were out there, and obviously it's. You talked about the stars, and I said I liked the way the filmmaking aspect in the beginning. What you know, you're seeing that frenetic quantum life that's kind of haunting his dreams. And there was a couple of moments through the movie they show the sky, and then the star kind of like swallowing itself. Like these little, I felt like they weren't there consistently. They were just kind of happened to be like, oh, like it's like they chose. It was a calculated decision, right? To like have. To be looking at the sky and be talking about like that idea and then actually watch it kind of happen. And it was like, boom, done. But they just moved on and then it was just kind of back to normal.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really, really creative. Did you guys pick up on throughout? Afterwards, I read it and I was like, oh yeah, duh. That like the parts in color were his viewpoint and the parts in black and white were Strauss's.
It was anything in black and white was when it was not so much Strauss's, but it just wasn't from first person.
His perspective. Yeah. Which I did not pick up at in the moment. And then it was, like I said, I read it and I'm like, Yeah, no, that makes sense. I didn't pick up on it.
Yeah, Lindsay and I went to the theater, and she told me that after, because she read that as well. I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And that it makes for you got to watch it again, because there's all the names and all those things. It just helps you when you know where the story's going. Go ahead.
No.
I was just gonna say that I love the structure. I love that in the beginning, you know, you see in the black and white perspective from Strauss, and he thinks, oh, he turned Einstein against me, and he's all paranoid about that, and he doesn't like what he said about him, about the isotopes sending him to Russia, and he thinks he's trying to make a fool out of him. He turned the whole scientific community against him. And then I just love at the end when that Senate aide is like, maybe they were talking about something more important than you. And then they do show that final conversation where he said, you know, and it's the whole crux of the movie. Yeah, they circle back to it. And you see, they weren't. The reason Einstein walks by him is because he's thinking about the fact that the guy who invented the atomic bomb is saying that we may have destroyed the world.
Yeah.
And he's pondering these deep thoughts. He just doesn't give a shit about Strauss. No. So just the perfect way to end the movie, perfect way to start it and to wrap it around that story and how it, and how, yes, someone like that could try to destroy basically Oppenheimer's life, who was, the greatest scientist of his generation, most important person ever. Wouldn't be the
first person in politics who was a little more focused on their success or failure than, you know, to have that be. That was a prescient thing, too. That was a thought I had the next morning. I'm like, I was obviously kind of thinking like, oh, man, like, can you imagine this situation playing out in like today's time? And is it? I mean, there's, I don't know, the level of the magnitude, I guess, of obviously what was going on.
I was trying to
obviously we've learned about this over the years, but I can tell you I've forgotten plenty of the history of this, but it was crazy to think of. And they kind of allude to it, and I think, was it Bohr or who said, you know, like, essentially, no, it was Krumholz.
Yeah.
Who was, like, almost pleading, and like, is it a bomb big enough to end all wars?
Yeah.
Like that was, his viewpoint was, like, almost like.
And that's what they were thinking. Yeah,
right.
That hopefully, like, if you make this and show its power, then it could end all war. And that's what what they were hoping for.
We're a long way from that.
Yeah, right.
Because they wanted to make it the absolute deterrent. Like, if we can build that, you should not build anything else. And ultimately, he realized, like, if we can build it, they can build it.
Yeah.
He's like, it may not be the same time as us, but they will be able to get there. And I was going to say, I thought that was really well done, because you see, you know, he's all excited in the beginning, like, hey, we're going to be part of pushing all these theories forward that we've just been talking about, and we'll finally get the mechanical side involved. And then once he gets to that point, he's like, shit, I shouldn't have done that. Like, no, now I got to think about, like, what is this all going to mean? Because now we're trying to take it to the next level. And we're, you know, like he tells Einstein, he's like, I think I might have destroyed
the world. Yeah, started a chain reaction that destroys the world. And yeah, that's why I think that scene, you know, when he talks about the gallows humor of them, they're like, oh, maybe we'll set the atmosphere on fire. Like, that they weren't certain that wouldn't happen. Like, that blew my mind when I saw the first time in the theater. I'm just, when they were making that joke, and when he was talking with Matt Damon's character, and, you know, explaining to him that, like, yeah, we did the calculations, and I had Einstein look over him. But Einstein, I love that too, that Einstein's like, I don't want to do the math. And that's true. When I read this biography, he wasn't good at the math part. He just, like, had the thoughts, and he had other people really do check all the math for him.
Well, that's the other thing that we've seen in a lot of sci-fi and, like, scientifically based films, where it's even like the space race and stuff like that, where they were just doing the things and they're like, I don't know if this is going to work. I don't know if we put ourselves on this rocket that we're not all going to blow up. Or, you know, I mean, they take it to a humorous extent in The Martian, but he's like,
yeah,
I mean, in theory, this should all work.
Right.
Like,
right.
Or I could blow myself up. So I again, like, when you're on that cutting edge of science and you're trying to figure out what the limits are.
Yeah.
Like, you truly don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. There's not 100% guarantee of anything, or, you know, not a non-zero percent chance that anything could happen. And I thought it was interesting as well. Just how great Nolan is at this stuff. Cause you think about, you were talking about the black hole scenes where they were showing parts of it, when he was talking about what it might do and swallow everything, even light. And you think about Interstellar, the way that he had Kip Thorne, who's a famous physicist as well, like, kind of give him direction on what a black hole might look like. And they they just have a picture of a black hole that came out a few years after that, and they're like, it looks like the fucking interstellar black hole. Like, how awesome is that? That he cares enough about the science to try to make it look real enough, and then it turns out, yeah, that's exactly how one looked like.
Yeah.
When they had a photograph of it.
On that note, you've touched on something that came up with some people today, and so a little quick diversion here for he's done 12 movies, one of them less popular than the others. So I asked you to rank your Christopher Nolan directed movies. I did 11 because I have not seen Following, which is literally his first movie.
Yeah, his first movie.
Jelani, had you seen Following?
I have not.
Okay, so Martin did put it in his because he has, unsurprisingly, seen it. But yeah, I wanted to hear...
How do you want to do it? Start with number one or
start at the bottom. Jelani, where do you got?
I'm looking at my ranking based on what we've talked. I have Oppenheimer at number 9.
Wait, that's not the bottom.
Well, so I have not seen... I have not seen Dunkirk. I have not seen The Following. And
it's also, I've been yelled at. Right, it's not called The Following.
Yeah, sorry. The Following is a Kevin Bacon show.
Right? I have seen that. Oh, it was on Fox.
Why. Yes.
All right, so you haven't seen Following or Dunkirk, or which Dunkirk. Leaves you at, you're still two away.
No, one. No, nine.
There's one. Oh, there's one other on here that I haven't seen, and I can't remember what it is now. But
all right, so wait. We'll get to.
I'll go from my bottom, and I'll give you the bottom three.
Okay.
Just so it's not just about.
Catch them up.
And the only two that. Dunkirk and Insomnia are my bottom two.
That's the other one I haven't seen, Insomnia.
Insomnia.
That was my guess.
And I love them both. That's what. Everything that, else is like 10 out of 10.
His, that was part of the deal. We were talking about work. Like, his list is so good.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's bad.
Yeah. And then Following is my number, whatever, number 10.
10.
Number 10. So, but I also love it.
11 is Dunkirk and 10 is Insomnia for me. But I will say I haven't seen Insomnia since it came out, and I probably would like to rewatch it before it could move.
That Pacino. Yeah,
I rewatched Pacino it recently. And it's good. It's really good, but
It's the precursor to True Detective Night Country.
That's good. That's real good.
All right, so
it's the opposite, right? Instead of dark, it's
exactly
full day. Yeah.
All right, so go to 9 then.
So I have Oppenheimer at 9.
Oh, so for me, and then it goes The Dark Knight Rises.
Me too.
And then Prestige.
Then me. Me too.
And Batman Begins.
Me too.
Whoa. Wow. So I have Memento and Tenet at 8 and 7.
Okay. Jelani, go 6 and 5.
So 6 and 5, I have The Dark Knight Rises and Interstellar.
Mm. So where did I have Batman? And then I go Oppenheimer to Tenet.
I have Tenet, then Memento.
Okay.
All right.
4 and 3?
4 and 3, I have The Dark Knight, The Prestige.
For me, it's Dark Knight and Memento.
I have The Dark Knight and then Oppenheimer.
And then 2, I have Batman Begins.
Wow.
That's fair. But you put Batman Begins above Dark Knight. That's interesting.
Yeah, you're one of the few, I think.
I love the original.
I agree. I do love it too. I had a hard time with that, but I...
Yeah, it's
Dark
hard.
Knight, because of what's his name?
Ledger.
Yeah, Ledger. It puts it over top. And it's so good. Inception and Interstellar are my two and one.
Martin and I are very, very similar.
Very close.
I have Inception as number one.
I just have Oppenheimer a lot higher than both of you. I really thought this movie was fantastic.
Yeah.
And it could jump for me. I had it above Tenet, but then I'm like, I don't know. I loved Tenet, and no one seemed to love it.
I was kind of blown away at how much I liked it. I feel like it didn't. Obviously, it was weird.
They're saying it's going back into theaters now because
they're giving it another shot. But it was only one day, wasn't it?
No.
Wasn't it only coming in for like one day, like last week?
Oh, maybe.
I don't know. I definitely, it did go in. I don't know. I don't know long term.
But they're saying it's going to get another shot. And I think people are going to go back to it now that he's going to win the Oscar and whatever else. But, but yeah, I Oppenheimer could definitely jump.
I do think this list, if you ask me in 6 months, I could have a different one. I would honestly like to watch all 12 movies and then like kind of consecutively and then rank them again, because I feel like I could move those a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And his 11, 12 are so high above so many other directors' movies that it's like,
that's the thing.
It's hard
Insomnia
to be like,
and Dunkirk. Dunkirk is just because
movie.
It's not.
I just didn't enjoy it.
I liked it, but it's a different, very different movie. And than anything he's done.
So, give me the rundown, your top five, and then I want Brady, your top five. And then
well, ours are pretty close.
But. Yeah, Interstellar, Inception, Memento, The Dark Knight, Tenet.
Interstellar, Inception, Oppenheimer, The Dark Knight, Memento.
Okay. Inception, Batman Begins, The Prestige, The Dark Knight, Interstellar.
Oh, you put Prestige up there. I do love the Prestige.
When I rewatched the Prestige a couple years ago, I was like, oh, I feel like I didn't quite like this as much as I thought. Again, I feel like these things are, I could move these around.
It's fluid. Yeah,
I just love that on these movies, like, there's four of them that are just.
Well, I think we all agree Interstellar's in like our top five, right? Like that was Inception was in all of our top five. Dark Knight, I think, was in all of our top five. And the other, we have, those are our variables then for after that.
And there's four distinct ones, like Inception, The Prestige, Tenet, and Memento. Like, those are, the way that the story is told in those are completely different than anything you've mm-hmm. seen.
Yeah.
And you're just like, wait, what? Right. Like, who thinks of that? Like, how do you come up with that? So that's where I kind of, like, weighted it. But then, I love Batman. I mean, I'm a huge Batman fan. Yeah. And so for the fact that, like, he restarted the Batman franchise, started the series, like, and brought it to a point where, like, you know, it wasn't just a comic book movie anymore. It was like a story. And I have to give more credit to the original because it kind of just shows you all the stuff that made Batman, Batman.
And he really did it early in his career. I kind of forgot that Memento is what put him on the map for me. And that's why I went back to watch.
Which is following Game right before that, which which is where I missed my opportunity. Well,
you know, I watched that probably in that year in 2000. When Memento came out, because of that's when I watched Following. But Batman Begins was
2005.
So I guess it's 5 years.
5 years later, but still.
But he did Insomnia in between there. And he just directed it. He didn't write it. But yeah, it takes a while. But I'm saying it's early in his career that he did Batman Begins, which I didn't realize.
And then Inception was, you know, that was the whole, hey, we want you to make a third Batman film. And he was like, well, I need to make a film for me.
Yeah.
And so that's what Inception was.
And then everyone knew he was a genius after Inception.
I would say, well, this year we'll probably have to do the Dark Knight trilogy, and we'll have to do Inception at some point.
Yeah. Back to Oppenheimer.
Just so I don't forget to bring it up, because I feel like we're cruising, because this movie is amazing. Other than it being Jelani's ninth favorite, but
it's not the worst movie.
60 seconds in, I'm. It was already astoundingly clear that Cillian Murphy was the right choice for this. I mean, it was
100%.
It was immediate. And I know that I'm not reinventing the wheel here. I mean, literally, he's going to probably win Best Actor.
Yeah.
He's won every award that's out there. It's crazy how spot on it feels. You feel it right away, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Makes me want to go back and watch Peaky Blinders, because I've never watched
it. I never did either.
Yeah, everyone says how great.
I think I watched like two or three episodes, and I was just kind of like, maybe I just was not fully paying attention. Yeah, some of the younger people at work were always raving about it. I was like, man, I just didn't really think it was that good.
And I didn't realize I kind of forgot that he was in all three of the Batman movies. And, you know, they said
Doctor?
Scarecrow.
He's Scarecrow.
Scarecrow, yeah.
Jonathan Crane. Dr. Jonathan Crane.
He knows the Batman.
I said doctor. You know that I got immediate credit?
Yeah.
He was a doctor? Yes, I got the toxin.
Damn it, Jim.
You guys forget he's in Red Eye with Rachel McAdams.
I've never seen it.
I mean, I didn't forget. I just
28 days later.
I use it
later?
In Crossover Grid all
why
the time.
Why would Red Eye be a 28 topic?
Days
of-
later is the one I think of for him. And yeah. We're probably going to rewatch that soon.
Well, it was his sixth collaboration with.
Yeah,
that's what
I kind of forgot that it was the sixth when I heard that. I'm like, oh yeah, he was in all three of them. I knew he was in Begins, but he makes an appearance in the other two as well.
Yeah,
yeah. So what are the other?
And then
three
he's in Inception.
Yep. Inception. Yeah.
This.
Okay.
Is he in Interstellar then?
Nope.
Or what's the other one?
Dunkirk.
Dunkirk. Okay. Yeah. Nolan sent him the script and said, will you be my Oppenheimer or something? He's like, I finally got you a lead role, because he's been wanting a chance to play a lead role. And Cillian said that too. He's like, I was waiting. I keep hoping every script I get that I'm going to get to be the lead.
Which
he said he'd do anything with
it. You know, probably a little bit of like biding your time. Obviously he's come a long way. He does. He's front run a show, Peaky Blinders, which was very successful on Netflix, obviously showing the capability to be a lead.
But this is his year for sure.
It just, it's right away. It just, you're like, oh no, I get it. Like, that's a guy I've seen, not in Red Eye, but in other movies. Mm-hmm. and it's just like, this is without a doubt the guy who should portray him. And they said he looks a lot like him.
He does.
Especially in like the hat and, the hat. You know, and kind of, which is the shot that everyone's seen. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like statuette wise, they're similar frame. They're similar size. He said Killian ate an almond a day to like keep his weight low and lose weight even more to try to be gaunt like, mm-hmm. like Oppenheimer was. And just thinking about eating only an almond a day was distressing to
me. There's a thing called an almond mom.
What?
Almond moms, where they just eat like five almonds or something like that. And that's like their whole meal. Basically what he did.
I don't want that life.
No.
I don't want your life. Yeah. I didn't want to forget, like, gloss over the fact, like, it's,
yeah,
we should have
probably led with Killian.
It's a no doubter. It was so quick in the movie. Sure. I was like, oh God.
Yeah.
Like,
it's almost,
he just really kind of dominates that role.
And not even worth mentioning. It's so great.
Right. Let's forget about it.
Let's not talk about just it. Until 40 face. Minutes into the pod.
Save it for the next one. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I don't think I enjoyed it as much as you, but I will go back and rewatch it.
Yeah. I think it definitely warrants, I'd watch it a third time. I'll give it a little bit of space here, but I definitely got a lot more out of it the second time.
Yeah.
Because you're not, you can actually listen to some of those dialogue pieces instead of trying to figure out what time they're in. You know, I remember being in the theater being like, all right, I think I get where we're going. And I think I get why the black and white but you didn't really understand all that. So it does help.
Well, and I think we talked about this plenty in the past too. Like, for better or worse, when I'm watching, I'm like trying to listen for quotes and I'm trying to listen for like things for our podcast, you know, to kind of take a note. I took a couple pausing and I'm going back and making sure I get a quote mm-hmm. right. And I'm like, I think after that and being able to kind of just sit and enjoy, I'm kind of mad that I didn't watch it in the theater. Like, I feel like I just really missed an opportunity to kind of, I know Nolan's hardcore about like making his movies. I saw they like made, it's the first ever they made film for black and white IMAX for this movie. It's never been done before, and they made it for them.
Oh, black and white film for IMAX. Yeah,
that's never been done.
Yeah, because there were only three, or there were like two or three theaters that were close to us, because Chicago does not have a 70mm film IMAX theater. We used to have one at Navy Pier, but it shut down. I don't know if we talked about it on the
Barbie,
pod.
Maybe.
Yeah. No, well, because people were trying to do Barbenheimer.
I'm saying, we talked about it. Pre-recording,
yeah.
But.
Yeah. So like, you have to go to either Indianapolis or like St. Louis, I don't know, somewhere else to get, if you want it to be in Chicago, if you want to do Barbenheimer in Chicago, you have to drive basically hours to get it, to watch it the way that that Nolan intended, which is a 70mm IMAX film print, as opposed to digital.
The I was actually talking to Jen about this, like the Barbenheimer double feature, like,
yeah,
such different movies.
I would have had a hard time going like double feature with these two because of the stark. I think we talked about this. I didn't dislike Barbie. I thought it was fine. I thought it was a little not necessarily for me, but I found things that I enjoyed in it. And with how much I loved this, I feel like it would have dwarfed my appreciation for Barbie if I watched them in the same day because of how much I love this and how much I thought that was just okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Whereas I think I'm better off having watched Barbie by itself, enjoying it for what it was, and then watching Barbenheimer.
I do love that it happened. I do love the Barbenheimer phenomenon. And it did. I think it helped this movie a lot more.
Tom Cruise.
I know. Tom Cruise is like, what?
Dead Reckoning. They didn't see this coming. There was a couple of notes I wanted to bring up because I made a note at like how affected I thought the scene was when he was in the shack or whatever it was in Los Alamos, and he was seeing the crowd like essentially be affected by what he thought, what they thought the bomb would do. Like the woman's face was like peeling, kind of peeling apart. I literally made a note. I was like, that was pretty powerful. And then I saw a note that's actually Christopher Nolan's daughter was that woman who had her face. And he said, if you create the ultimate destructive power, it will also destroy those who are near and dear to you. I suppose this was my way of expressing that and what to me were the strongest possible terms. And I was thinking, I'm like, I was affected without having any kind of connection to that person whatsoever. Like, I can't even imagine having being in that role. And I just thought that was a really impressive way to kind of showcase that. And I thought it was kind of an amazing scene.
And if you watch it again, you notice that they do the stomping part, you know, throughout, and maybe you notice it, but you hear it right away. It's like one of the first sounds you hear in the movie too, because that's what he's always thinking about, is that. And if you watch that scene again too, where he's like, he's trying to make the crowd, you know, like
hyped up.
He's trying to, they're all hyped up, and he wants to, he doesn't want to be like the downer, but he's thinking about, oh my God, what have I done? See, yet he's saying like, and I only wish we didn't get it earlier. We could have used it on the Germans, you know?
So I felt like it wasn't, maybe I could be wrong here, but I felt like he wasn't there and the crowd was kind of, they weren't on the same level. And then he just threw that in at the end as like a salvage moment that did bring the crowd into it. But it, to me, it felt like prior, like kind of the early stages of that conversation were him trying to talk about it at a level that the crowd was not ready, was not receiving it. And they wanted the, like, and this might be a little more of our perspective now, but like they wanted the whole like USA vibe, which is not what he was feeling at all.
So, yeah. That's why it's good acting at this point. Cause you can see it in his face, but then
and then it's like a Hail Mary to the crowd. And it's like, I wish we could have done it. And then they rallied together. But
yeah. And I think kind of, more like Martin was saying though, like,
damn it.
You're right. They were all at a fever pitch, and he is contemplating like, this isn't the way that I wanted this to go. Like, I don't really want to try to rationalize and get these people all excited because we just killed 110,000 people. He then was like, oh, what? They're already crazed. So let me not try to bring them down because they can see it in my face that I'm not feeling this. And then so he throws the, you know, the wish we could have dropped it on the Germans. And then everybody goes, and she's like, I just got to get out of here because this is not where I want to be. I'm not in the right space.
Speaking of the sound, A, the score was great. B, when they cut out the sound in those moments and you just hear the breathing for however long. I mean, it felt like it was probably a couple of minutes, but maybe it was only one. And then you get that blast. I mean, just perfect filmmaking, right? And that's the big moment. And for like there's so much dialogue in this movie, right? So there's not a lot of really big action, you know, for a movie about the bomb. It's really just that one scene that's really the big action scene. But I mean, talk about,
but that's
power, as much power as you can get in a way that only Nolan can do.
And that's part of why I couldn't turn it off. Like, I felt like that tension build in Los Alamos towards the bomb, like, especially as you started to get closer, was to me like so palpable.
So well done.
There was no way I was turning that movie. Like, I was locked in.
And when, what's the name? Tell her that Safdie brother puts on, is it
sunblock? Did I rub and, it in? Shades?
Oh my God. It was just a little bit of humor.
I think they said that in reality, he didn't do the sunblock, but he did he was the one who went in the car and was like, the glass will protect me.
Yeah.
Which
isn't true, right?
No. No.
But did they not know that?
At the time, they don't know everything. They just know a lot.
I don't think that guy in the car was a scientist, was he?
Well, I don't know, but he said the window will protect me from the UV.
That's what Teller actually did. I think the comedy aspect was. Yeah. But
we didn't talk about Gary Oldman.
I know, that's where I was going. So
same page today, Brady.
from that, what he was feeling in front of them, people, like, he was feeling the whole like blood on his hands type of thought. And obviously going into that meeting with President Truman, you know, he kind of, and what I read was that is pretty close to historically accurate, that Truman was disgusted by a scientist thinking that he, like, because one, he had a lot more blood on his hands for actually being the one who did it.
Yeah.
But also they said he's a former military member too. Yeah. Like, he literally had blood on his hands. He was the one. So for a scientist, it was almost offensive to hear someone that to think that they had that much impact, even though they, by creating it, legitimately did.
How does Oldman make himself look like everybody? Like, he looked like Truman. I don't have to, this is just the glasses.
They were like, I think I read, he played Churchill and Truman.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And he looked like Churchill, too. Like, yeah. But he has
and
a
then you see him
face.
In Slow Horses, and you're like, this guy can't look like anybody.
Right,
like,
yeah. He has a very distinct face, and yet he somehow is like, can
Commissioner
morph
Gordon
into anything. Yeah. Yeah, he's Commissioner Gordon. He's so good.
He's
yeah.
awesome, man. I mean, honestly, like.
Is he my favorite actor? Maybe. Maybe.
It's not out of the realm.
It's not out of the running. I always kind of forget, you know, when people ask who's your favorite. It, a lot of times it's Oldman, and I just always forget about
it. So we got five.
Oh, geez.
Oscar winners
well,
in the movie and five nominees because we're so which one do you want to start with?
Let's go with the winners.
Yeah, I'll start with the winners.
So Oldman, Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
Matt
Damon,
Kenneth Branagh,
Robert Downey Jr.
Boom, boom, boom. No. Damon, Branagh, Oldman. Yes.
Emily Blunt or Florence Pugh. No.
No, Emily Blunt's nominated, but
for
not
what?
A winner. I think she's nominated for this.
Oh, but wait, are you including this movie as nominees or previous nominees?
Oh shoot! Well, hold on. My list only shows four, and now I'm confused. Matt Damon, Sir Kenneth Branagh, who both won an original screenplay category, consecutive Best Actor winners, Casey Affleck.
Oh right,
Gary Oldman,
Manchester by the Sea,
and my link cut out. The name is literally credit.
We're leaving this all in.
Think about your nominees while I look.
All right. And we're talking about previous nominees, not for this movie.
The Oscars haven't happened yet. So you can't give anyone in this movie an award. The Oscars haven't.
No, I understand that. But I'm
nominees.
But you're not saying people that are nominated in this movie because it's only
or this
Killian
movie?
Murphy's
they're,
only.
They're nominated.
Oh.
I haven't paid attention to the nominees this year.
Martin knows the shit like
no,
the back of his head.
No, I don't, but it's Killian Murphy then.
He's going to go Killian Murphy, Emily Blunt, Robert Downey Jr., Matt Damon. I don't know.
Who else did we?
Rami Malek.
Oh, yeah. Nominated? Rami Malek. He won. He's the other winner. He's the other winner.
That's
good. Oh. I remember when you see him early on. And I'm like, oh, it's Rami Malek. And I'm like, oh, he's no role. And then clearly
Gary
comes
Oldman
in
was only in it for that one scene.
Yeah, but
I know.
That I knew was going to be that. And that's fine. I'm fine with that. Kind of, but
agreed.
Same with Rami. I just knew there had to be more than just him holding a piece of a clipboard and getting it knocked out of his hand.
He's
and I'm
a,
like,
he's a hero.
Come back. And
underneath
then he comes
the
back.
So, Don, you had Killian Murphy. You said yes?
Yes.
Yes.
RDJ?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry. Did you say any other nominees besides that?
He did.
Emily Blunt.
Correct.
And then
I don't know the
two
losers,
left.
So no, I'm just kidding.
You got Florence Pugh.
Oh, I did say Florence Pugh.
Oh,
but I didn't think.
Apologies.
I mentioned, but I didn't think I it wasn't my guess because I didn't think she did. What is she getting nominated for?
Well, real quick, and Tom Conti.
Which one is he?
Tom Conti.
He plays Albert Einstein.
Oh. He did play a really good Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
But I wonder what he got nominated
for. So they said that they filmed at Princeton, and he said he found great joy just walking around Princeton dressed up as Albert Einstein,
oh,
just watching people's reactions. And I was like, that'd be amazing. Amazing.
Because that's what, apparently that's, again, from the biography, like that's what he... that's what he would do. He just had that hair, and he would just walk around and just be happy in his later years in life and just kind of contemplating shit. So, yeah.
Was Pugh nominated for Midsommar?
That's what I guessed, but I don't know.
Or Don't Worry, Darling.
Oh, yeah, maybe that.
Yeah. Did you guys see that?
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of, like, hype before. And
well,
then it was like,
that
maybe it's not
weird,
as good,
yeah.
And it was just because of the whole thing with Harry Styles. But the movie wasn't bad. It was, like, a really good... Like Twilight Zone episode or something.
Yeah.
Like a long Twilight Zone episode.
No. Little Women.
Oh, Little Women. Is that with what's her name? Barbie?
Greta Gerwig directed, yeah.
I've never seen that.
Nor I.
Surprising.
I feel like I saw
there's like
one
five
or
versions
right.
of Little Women.
I don't want to make any of our female listeners mad, but I feel like I got one or two under my belt, and I just can't do more of them. I can't just keep remaking that stuff. I can't do it.
I'll watch Greta someday, for sure.
Oh, sure. Well, good on you.
Just not, probably not tonight.
Probably not. Well, I don't ever want to rule it out with Martin, but I feel like I'll say that and he'll be like, I'm halfway done with, you know,
Greta Gerwig's little
American Prometheus or whatever, the book.
Yeah.
I will say,
do an audiobook.
One of the writers I saw, he died right before the script got done of cancer. The two guys that wrote the book. And I was like, man, that's really unfortunate because I just would be amazed if they wouldn't have been both really happy and impressed with the way that it was done. Yeah, it was Kai Bird and Martin Sherwin is who passed away. And Nolan, I think, said something about that, too. He was like, I was unfortunate that he didn't get a chance to see it. But
I think Nolan gets all of his good ideas from watching his favorite franchise, Fast and the Furious. So yeah. You can see it. It really plays out.
It does. I got one more note before, and I'm done. But I'm more upset that Martin didn't bring it up. I can't believe you didn't mention Olivia Thirlby.
Oh, yeah. She's in it. My girl, Olivia Thirlby. I totally forgot. I don't remember seeing her the first time I saw it.
For this really?
Yeah. She was just...
She's the only female scientist. The only
female scientist, yeah.
Oh, okay. She was one that comes in and says, I don't know. Or she's like, I can do more than just type.
Yeah, because they're arguing. Yeah. They're like, no, but we don't know what it's going to do to
Lily Hornig is who she plays. But
yeah. They're like, we don't know how it's going to affect you. And I was like, how is it going to affect you? We don't know that either. So the radiation.
Well, and I had this note because, one, I know you're a big fan. And where do we know her from initially?
Dread.
No, not Juno first?
Oh, Juno too.
I feel like Juno's.
Well, we haven't done Juno, so.
Right.
But it doesn't exist in this universe.
No, I'm just saying
that movie doesn't exist.
we've talked about her in Dread. We have not talked about Juno yet. But
correct.
Yes, I first met her in Juno.
I feel like the audience is open to all movies that they've seen. But
apparently she's in Why the Last Man, the show, which I'm reading the comic right now. But
why? But Nolan said, and I'm calling this out for a specific reason. Nolan said that she was extremely adept at contributing encyclopedic details about her character, claiming that she was helpful providing some of the jokes about being a female member of the project, ideas for her hair, wardrobe, and improvising some of the speech, urging the bomb not to be used on Japan, which, and she's kind of standing up in front of the team of scientists, which makes me think that you're going to see a lot more of her. Because it feels like, just reading the little I did about it, I was like, it feels like one of those things where it's like, she's now going to be in Nolan's camp.
Yeah, he's going to be
and so it's like, whatever he ends up doing down the road, that you may have more Olivia Thirlby in your...
I like it.
I know. I thought you might. So I wanted to make sure and throw it in.
She works hard and wanted to show him that she works hard.
Dude.
That's smart.
If you're going to impress somebody, impress Christopher Nolan when you're going to get your shot.
Yeah.
As always... Don't you become death, destroyer of worlds. Become listener, subscriber of podcasts. Thanks, and take the sheets in.